The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello, here we go. Hello, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our ever-faithful Brian the Engineer. And on the phone, we have finished fighting his dragon, his army of dragons in the Bronx from last week. Is very own Hassan Godwin.
Dragons now.
Yeah, you were fighting dragons.
I'm never just, missed a train or something like that, right?
missed a train, Hassan Godwin? Where's the fun in that?
Trust me, there's no fun in missing a train, but I think it's less fun fighting a dragon. Probably.
Unless you're a dragon fighter.
I have a certificate to prove that I'm a dragon fighter.
Yeah, you took the class. You took the five-hour class.
I took the five-hour class to kill dragons. Yes, I did. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'm a dragon killer. Yeah. I killed a dragon last week.
Yeah, stab here, use the pointy side, that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. This is the stuff that they teach you.
You gotta watch the training video.
Yeah, asbestos underwear, that whole thing, the whole nine yards.
Yes. And speaking of classes, our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Sound, is actually taking a class right now, so he will be unable to join us this week. So that's
he's taking a class.
Yeah.
For what? For book signing?
Yes, he's
taking to sign books.
Yes, right hand, left hand, front of the page, on the outer cover. Yeah, his book signing class that he's getting ready for the December convention that we're trying to get into.
Awesome. Okay.
If anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online at www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on any live audio streaming. Also, on the GBB website, you can see me. Unless you have, the spy stuff, you can see Hassan on the WGBB web camera. Live, that's provided that you're listening to us right now in the present, as opposed to listening to a future episode in the past.
I'm not even going to stop you. Go ahead. You go.
So we're going to take away with the news.
Please do. What's in the news? What's going on in the world today?
The news is brought to you in part by the rat bastards at Belmore Towing, located in Belmore, New York, who love to handle... unscrupulous yet extremely legal business practices.
Yes.
For example, such
very
as...
Very important that we emphasize the legality of it.
Yes, the legality of charging $50 for a $7 lug nut that needs to be changed on your car. So if you ever want to get royally screwed over in the most legal fashion possible, call Belmore Towing.
Call Belmore Towing. Well done.
And, of course, the soon-to-be-released movie... which is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Monkey Killer, where Abraham Lincoln comes out of retirement to fight the Monkey Vampire King and his army of monkey vampires riding on flying sharks.
Wait. Abraham Lincoln comes out of retirement.
Yes, Abraham Lincoln comes out of retirement.
There's something really wrong with that, because I don't think he got a chance to retire.
Well, he retired from being a vampire killer.
Ah, but this was before John Wilkes Booth retired him permanently.
Right.
Okay. I got you.
Yes, because he went into hiding.
Yes, he did. Before he became president.
Right.
Went into hiding.
He went into hiding, and then he became the vampire monkey killer.
The vampire monkey killer.
With his acts of truth.
Yes, the acts of truth. Now, I think I asked you this question before, but I'm going to ask you it again just to clarify for any new listeners. Does that mean he killed vampires and monkeys? Or does it mean that there are vampire monkeys?
There are
actual monkeys that are vampires, and he killed them specifically.
Yes, the Transylvania got ran out of people, and there were monkeys all around. And they turned the monkeys into vampires, so they're monkey vampires.
Gotcha. You know what? that's perfectly logical, because you do really have to stop monkey vampires.
Yes, that's like the worst kind of monkey vampire. The worst kind of vampires is the monkey vampires.
Yes, that's terrible, because they, you know, they're bad enough.
They can
rip people's face off normally.
Yes.
So when they're vampires, that's not cool.
And they're riding flying sharks with machine guns. So those are the worst kind. You gotta be careful of those guys.
This is gonna be the greatest movie ever. It's gonna literally be. Well, the only thing that's missing is Debbie Gibson. And what's her name?
Tiffany.
The other one.
Tiffany.
And Tiffany. Yeah. Tiffany and Debbie Gibson. We gotta get them to be in the film, and it'll be perfect. We'll make gazillions. Not millions or billions.
Gazillions.
Yes.
So now let's go with the sad news. Emmy-winning actress and singer Polly Bergen, most recently known for her role as Felicity Huffman's mother on Desperate Housewives, as well as the past mistress of Tony Soprano on the late of Tony Soprano's late father on the Sopranos TV series, has died from natural causes. Polly starred in such films as the original Cape Fear, Kisses from a President, At War with Army, That's My Boy, The Stooge, Move Over Darling, Making Mr. Right, A Cry Baby, just to name a few. Polly also had a long Broadway career and a television career, having her own television show. And she also founded a beauty products company that bore her name.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember her from...
How old was she when she died?
She was 84. Mm. A spry 84.
That is actually young.
Yeah.
Because by today's standards,
yeah, because you know we've been reporting a lot of people dying recently. Well, every week before somebody dies, and
yeah,
the numbers aren't that low anymore.
No, these guys are way up there usually.
Yeah,
they're not letter collecting,
right?
But they're kind
they don't,
of
they don't
up
get
there.
the letter from Abraham Lincoln when you get 100
yes,
years.
Yes, the Abraham Lincoln. Right, gotcha.
Yes, she was, right, she was 84, bad. And our thoughts and prayers are with her family. We're going to have some good news.
It's morphin' time!
Writer Roberto Arce has dropped out of the Power Rangers movie because of his Star Trek III directing obligation has created a scheduling conflict. He'll no longer be the executive producer of the film.
Hold on. He's going to now be directing
Star Trek 3.
Orci, so, Roberto,
yes,
Orci.
His first directorial debut.
He's moving from executive producing the Power Rangers movie.
Yep.
Which is really good for you, who's a Power Rangers fan.
Yep.
To now writing and directing the third Star Trek movie.
Right.
Which is seriously bad for Star Trek fans, myself included. So it's kind of good news, but it's not.
Well, it's...
I'm not a big Power Rangers fan. I don't hate it. I don't think that the franchise deserves Roberto Orci, so I'm happy that he's off of that.
It's like a curse. You're making it out like it's a curse that he's going to be... That he was
is,
on...
It is. Because he was Transformers. He was involved in Transformers, and he was also involved with the first two Star Trek movies, which, in my opinion, were not that good. Everything he's kind of been involved with has been pretty terrible.
I will continually defend Hawaii Five-O, and he was part of that.
Okay, I never saw Hawaii Five-O. So
right,
fine.
So you don't have you don't have that.
I guess, but he also told the fans to f off.
when they
told him, "Hey, we didn't really like your last movie. Could you step up the creativity a little bit?" And he said, "You didn't like it because you're a bunch of idiots, and you can f off." And that's a paraphrase.
Yeah,
so,
I remember that.
Yeah, so you know what? He's no good.
So
sorry. Is Hawaii Five-O still on?
Yeah, Hawaii Five-O new episode aired
last
Friday. Yeah, he's still executive producing, writing, or whatever he does
executive
with that show.
Producing.
Whatever he does with that show.
Producing is very different than actually being a writer and a director. You don't actually have your hand in the creativity of the thing. You just find the money and you pay the money and you tell the other creative people what they need to do. That's basically what you do. You don't actually inflict your artistic integrity or lack thereof in this particular case on the medium in and of itself. So he can continue to executive produce. If that's your get out of jail free card for him,
yes.
It's not really that good.
So he's no longer executive producing the Power Ranger film. Of course, none of that will change. the more phenomenal release of July 22nd, 2016, because Ashley Miller, Zach Steins, who penned the screenplays for X-Men First Class and Thor, will continue to write the script. Saban, who is producing it with Brian Gastini and Allison Schemer, who oversaw the original Hunger Games. So, you know, they're in some pretty money-making hands. So they might actually come up with something pretty decent.
Oh, yeah. If it was going to be decent, they would have brought it on 2015 to rival Star Wars.
Well, no, the original release date was 2016. That was the plan.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But, you know, it's Power Rangers. Like, you know, that's all you got to say. It's Power Rangers. It's a silly show.
Yeah, but, I mean, that goes both ways. Because I could say, oh, yeah, well, it's Power Rangers, so who cares? You know, so but you still have to try to get it right. You still have to try to do a good job.
Just make it entertaining is all they have to do. You know, they have to go all serious and everything. You just make it entertaining, make it goofy, make it cheesy, and it'll be all right.
You don't have to make it the Dark Knight, you know, the Dark Power Rangers. But, you know, you got to, in order to make it entertaining, one would think you have to put an effort into it. You know, you have to.
Yes.
So there you go. That rules out Mr. Roberto Orci right there.
He doesn't make entertaining stuff. Speaking of writer Roberto Orci, he wants to reunite William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy as Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock in Star Trek III, or 13, depending who you ask. Last time these two actors shared the screen together as the characters was in 1991, Star Trek: The Undiscovered Country. Which also was the last film featuring the original crew. So that's a bonus point right there that he wants to get.
I don't know how they're going to do that because, as you've seen the other two films, that Mr. Spock, the original Leonard Nimoy Mr. Spock, is in the movies because he came back into the past from the future.
Right.
Into the past.
It's an alternate.
He came from the original timeline future
right.
in which Kirk is dead.
Right.
So if he's going to come back into the past of this alternate timeline where Kirk is alive, which is Chris Pine, he's young Kirk.
Right.
So how do they get an old Kirk?
Well, isn't it logical that Chris Pine will grow up to be William Shatner, and hence William Shatner can come back from his timeline? Or since Kirk had died, but he was in that wave, and he didn't actually die, he can be in
the Nexus?
Yeah. You know, maybe the Nexus travels across all timelines.
There are ways to do it, and there are probably good ways to do it. But it's Roberto Orci. So
he might drop the ball on this one.
There's no might.
Man. No
might. And now he's going to direct, so you don't even have Abrams' expertise, and at least he knows how to direct a film.
Less lens flare. That's points right there.
Huh?
Less lens flare, at least.
Lens, yeah, maybe.
Hooray.
even Abrams admitted he used a little too much lens flare in the second movie.
I'll never forget how you ruined that movie for me.
Wait, Super 8? I'm sorry.
You're like, yeah, he does a whole bunch of lens flare and lens flare. And I was like, no, he doesn't. And that's all I saw was lens flare and bad writing. that's all.
You can't see the bad writing. The bad writing is not my fault.
It was so bad. I saw the writing, how bad it was. I saw the script floating by.
I cannot be blamed for the bad writing.
It was hidden behind the lens flares, how the bad scripts were, the words were popping out.
The bad thing I did to you is I brought to your attention the lens flare, which was supposed to distract you from the bad writing. And since I brought it to your attention, it no longer distracted you, and then you got hit in the head with bad writing.
They teamed up. It was like a team-up of bad writing and lens flare.
You know, as a little piece of trivia, weren't you and I the only two people in the theater?
Well, it was a screening, so we had our own show.
Yeah, but nobody wanted out.
Yes,
nobody
else wanted to see a free movie. Nobody else wanted to see a free movie.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm sure you have more. Please,
all right. So, moving along, let's see. Here's a bit of something I think would be quite interesting. Authorities say a new online trend known as swatting has become a way for players of combat-themed video games to retaliate against opponents while other players watch in a window that shows a live image of the other players.
What?
Okay. What it is that nowadays with the high-end gaming, the next-gen consoles, the PS4 or the PS1 right. or whatever the hell it is, and the Xbox One or what, you know, whatever.
Yeah, those new
you have to wear the headsets, and you get, you know, you there's a camera, and you can see the other players playing the game, and you can talk right. to the other players. So unhappy players who are playing combat-themed video games, such as, you know, war or whatever, shoot 'em up and, you know, real life War 5, are unhappy because they're playing against them, and so they're making 911 calls against the other players.
911 call?
Yes, so I'm playing a game with you online, right?
Right.
And I make a 911 call on your behalf saying that there's something going on at your place. And then.
So the cops come, and I get distracted from playing my game.
Right.
So you can kill my character.
Right. So, such examples are, one caller said that he shot his coworkers at a Colorado video game company and had hostages. Another one in Florida said her father was drunk wielding a machine gun and threatening their family. A third caller in New York said that they had claimed that they killed his mother and threatened to shoot first responders. So, in each case, SWAT teams were dispatched to the scene and found no violent crimes or wounded criminals, only startled video game players sitting at their computers. The players exploit online programming that trick the dispatchers into believing that an emergency call is coming from the victim's own phone or address, all the while they conceal their own identity and locations.
No.
So, yes. So I'm playing a game with strangers online, and I'm computer savvy, so I can, you know, what is it, change your IP address, so that way it makes me look like I'm somewhere else, even though I'm not.
Oh my God.
And I'm calling up 911 and saying that the guy who I'm playing against is having some 911
murdering.
Yes, is
yeah,
murdering
plotting
people.
To kill the president.
Yes. And so they're like, okay, this seems legit. Let's send the SWAT. And they send the SWAT team. And while they're playing the game, you can see the SWAT breaking into the guy's house, throwing them down, arresting them. All while we're playing this game. And while other people who are watching us play the game and playing with us also are also watching the guy getting arrested. You're stunned? Is that the stun of silence?
You know what? I don't even have... That is just mind-numbingly... I don't have the right word for it. It's mind-numbing. It's blinding. It's mind-numbingly terrible. Seriously, because you're losing a video game, you're going to mobilize. You're going to mobilize civil servant forces on your behalf.
Right.
To stop your opponent from killing your imaginary character.
Right. But
you don't understand. People don't get the disconnect with millennials, right?
No.
People are completely unaware of the consequences of their actions.
But the thing is, they're able to, you know, make people think that the internet stuff is coming from a different place than what it actually is. So other people can get blamed for this type of thing. So, you know, if I'm in New York and somebody's in California and they're using their computer stuff, they can pretend to be me in New York, and then they'll have the cops come to my house as I'm playing this game online on the camera, and they'll beat me down with the beatdown stick because I'm playing this game, and the whole other people playing this game are watching me get beat down with the beatdown stick. Isn't that crazy? Like, it's mind-blowing.
It's beyond crazy. There's no words for it. There really are no words for it.
Effort,
it's beyond insane.
The effort that goes into this type of thing. Like,
for winning a game, though. This is what I'm saying. That's why this planet and whatever have so many bad things to say right now, and I'm not going to say any of them because I'm typical for saying all these bad things. So listen to me. That's why this planet is doomed. Because the people are putting their innovation into this stupidity. This level of stupidity. This petty, meaningless stupidity. First, you know how many incidents they probably have stopped real law enforcement from really
right,
like,
because
intervening
of the,
in
yes.
because they wanted to stop little Billy from
yes.
capturing a flag,
yes.
a cyberspace flag.
And they're
Come
calling
on.
In like the SWAT team. It's not just like, you know, Frank the Cop. They're calling in the big guns.
This is what I'm talking about. It's like, come on. I have no words for it.
The only thing I can think of to sum this idea up is there was an old series called Get Smart with Don Adams.
Yes.
And he had a phrase, And he said, if they only use their powers for good. Because, man, that's all. I'm just thinking the complexity of this all just to for a game and the lives lost and, the, you know, like, man, if they only use that knowledge and power for good.
It's so stupid. It's not even, like, honestly, to even be outraged about it is a waste of brain power. Because it's so blatantly wrong for such a blatantly stupid reason, you know? It's not even like they won't, you lose your man, you lose your character, you lose this game, and they won't let you ever play the game again, you know? You plug into the damn game anytime you want. So what is the point of winning that one game, of mobilizing these people to win this one game? You know, I don't understand. What is the point of distracting this person so you can win that one game? There's no point to it whatsoever.
I'm not a gamer, so I can't say. I don't have that gaming mentality.
But you see what I'm saying? It's not necessarily in the sense that because we don't understand the nuances of being a gamer, we don't know why that would be important. Can you honestly say there is an argument for such kind of behavior?
No.
You know, logic?
No.
That's what I'm saying. Right. There's no point to it.
Okay.
Move on.
Right.
Before I hurt somebody.
Speaking of hurting somebody.
Oh, great. How did I do that?
Sony Pictures has commissioned Oculus writer and director Mike Flanagan and his co-writer Jeff Howard to reboot 1997's I Know What You Did Last Summer, which itself was based on a 1973 novel by Lois Duncan. According to reports, this film is a high priority for Sony, who wants it out in 2016, presumably the summer. For those of you who don't know...
High priority, huh?
Yeah.
Because the Spider-Man thing is not working out for them.
They don't have a franchise.
They're taking a lot of heat off of that Spider-Man thing.
Sony really doesn't have a franchise right now. They're scrambling.
So they want to because in this age where horror movies aren't really prevalent anymore,
right?
They want to re-engage this horror franchise, which was basically a ripoff of Scream,
right?
A reboot to rip off Scream. It wasn't the original book wasn't a ripoff, but the franchise, the film franchise, was rebooted to rip off the Scream,
right?
Scream.
Correct.
Phenomenon. Right?
Yes.
And so now, without Scream, without any new horror phenomenon that has come out now, they want to reboot I Know What You Did Last Summer. They want to reboot a reboot that was rebooted to rip off, a particular genre.
Yes.
For no reason.
Well, for
and
a reason.
Adamant about
well,
it.
For the reason is that they want money. That's the reason.
But, I mean, there's no point, there's no proof that they would make money off of it.
Right, but...
Because, like, Scream 4 came out just recently.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And did nothing. It did abysmally.
Because it was done. That genre is over with for now, but maybe
that's
they're going to come back.
So I Know What You Did Last Summer is a ripoff. That's like bringing back Urban Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a blatant ripoff of Scream.
I remember Urban Legends, yeah.
I remember the killer went around in a wool coat with a hoodie. It was a nylon coat with a hoodie.
The thing that bothered me about that movie was that the killer...
That you were watching it?
Well, no. I mean, that the killer, you know, who the killer was revealed to be, the actress who was playing that role was not physically capable of doing all the stuff.
All the
criminal...
Ability.
Yeah. Because I'm like, that person... There's no way that person could have done any of this stuff.
Yeah, not to mention she kind of grisly for disclosure. She kind of lost her career for being a real killer. So you know.
Yeah. well, there you go. For those of you who don't know, I Know What You Did Last Summer, follow the story of four high school seniors who accidentally run over a pedestrian and try to dispose of the body. 1 year later, the hooded killer begins killing the teenagers in an apparent act of revenge. The movie spawned two sequels, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, and the direct-to-video I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer.
Wow.
I wonder what they're going to call this one. I Still Remember What You Did in 1997 during the summer.
Yeah.
Like, is there anybody left? Like, how many people were involved in that car accident?
When they first came out, I called it, I scammed you out of money last summer. And then the sequels, I'm still scamming you out of money.
And, you know, I've never seen those movies, and I wanted to see it because I wanted to see Sarah Michelle Gellar get killed on screen. Because I was in the trailer. She was falling off. And I was like, oh, I want to see that movie because, you know. But I never
you wanted to see the movie specifically to see Sarah Michelle Gellar get killed.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. And you actually admitted that.
And I didn't see it, though. So obviously it wasn't that big of a deal.
Well, yeah. You could have just kind of left that story alone without like introducing your own psychotic proclivities. But, you know, it's fine. She actually, before you go to the break,
yes,
she's actually the only character who kind of tried to live. You know, in those horror movies, it's typical.
Oh, the smart one.
Damsel in distress, you know, she runs up the stairs and she should be going down. She rings for the elevator. She trips on her own feet, you know, that kind of thing. I will honestly say that Sarah Michelle Gellar in I Know What You Did Last Summer really wanted to live. It was the character she played really wanted to live. She went through great lengths to try to survive, and didn't. But you know, it was impressive, even for me, who was a complete skeptic watching both of those films. I actually saw both of them.
Really?
Yeah.
You went.
I saw them at home. I saw them on
cable. You double dipped.
Yeah. Well, you know, even the self righteous get bored. So you know, what can you do?
All right. So we're ready for our break. We'll be right back with a game from the radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From The Radio. It's your host, Marge, speaking along with Hassan Gawain on the phone. Just quickly before we get to our guests, I want to mention that as a little note, the Star Trek theme actually has words to it. I remember in the 90s sometime, I went to a library and it was a book of theme songs. And it had the words to all the theme songs, and there were words to that Star Trek song. So, how about
that? What were the words?
I don't remember. I just remember it said Star Trek a lot in it.
But does that qualify as a follow-up question?
Yes, no follow-up questions. How am I going to remember it from back then? I just know it existed.
So, I know Bonanza had words.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, Bonanza. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum,
corn. I actually know the words of the Bonanza song, which is terrible.
Oh, see, that's why. That's why, you know. All right.
Yeah.
So you get the follow-up questions, not me.
Yeah, but we got a guest coming, so yes. I'm not going to recite the lyrics for them.
So,
but
as,
rest assured, Bonanza does have lyrics to it.
So, as Hassan alluded to no more than 2 seconds ago, we have a special guest on the show today. We'll be talking to, about, and with, which is Chris Buckner from the Comic Artists Guild. Say hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
There you go. So, the Comic Artists Guild, they've been around for a long time. We had them on our show, man, this is, I'm going to say, at least 6-7 years ago. How long ago has the Comic Artists Guild been in play?
It was formed back in November of 2000, so we're going on 14 years now.
Wow. And I remember that you've had quite a change between of what it was to what it is now, and it's grown since we had you on the show. And the question I want to ask is, what took you so long to come back on the show?
Well, unfortunately, when they came on the show the first time, that was before my tenure. But now that we're back, you know, we're making the runs. It just takes time to get everything in place and have something which to grace your listeners with that makes their listening worthwhile.
Okay, so we're not going to waste anybody's time here, so let's tell everybody what the Comic Artists Guild is.
All right, the Comic Book Artists Guild is a networking organization designed to bring creators together, and these are creators of all levels, from beginners to industry veterans. And our membership comes together to encourage each other, learn from each other, and produce works together to help advance not only their own personal projects, but also their profiles within the industry.
Now, why is that important to have a network of people, artists of different varying levels of skill, getting together?
Well, it's just like anything else. You know, you have an ambition to be something, and you need to learn what it is that you want to do and how to do it. And there are people out there with the experience and the know-how to help guide you in the right direction to make your work the best it can be. And there's only so much you can learn from Googling something or going into an online chat room or going on Facebook, which are the popular methods now. But when you have the face-to-face interaction and the real-time critiquing of your work and your skills, that goes a long way to helping you establish your voice and your identity in your field.
So that means you guys actually have meetings and people get together in like a physical room. Are you sure that this is the way to go? Because the internet is like, you have to keep away from everybody.
The internet is good for connecting with people that are a little bit out of your range. Like you want to talk to somebody in Barcelona, you can do that now, which is great. But there's a kind of energy that comes from getting a lot of creative people in one space together. And we do have meetings. Right now, we currently have meetings in the New York Metro, in Connecticut, and in the Massachusetts area, usually around the Boston area. And when we come together, a lot of people have told me that after these meetings that they've been more energized than usual to go out and produce something. And a lot of them actually do, when they get home, start getting right back to work.
So is it like a seminar? How do these meetings work?
Well, the meetings, we get together, we discuss what's going on with CAG, we discuss what's going on with each other, we show off our work, we show off portfolios, and that's where the critiquing comes in, the critiquing, the opinions, the suggestions. Basically, if somebody is stuck on an idea, you know, it's basically a think tank to help generate, help lead right in the right direction to get that idea going.
And I know you also produce books yourselves, right?
Yes, we do. We in our first 7 years, we produced 7 anthologies. Our anthologies have gotten a little bigger, so they come out a little less frequently. But our big book now is Iconic, which is an all-ages anthology that takes public domain characters, historical figures, and our members put their own twists on them. And right now, we have 2 out. We were hoping to get the 3rd one done by Comic-Con, but we had a couple delays. That'll be coming out sometime this winter.
So you're not going to make Abraham Lincoln Vampire Monkey Killer, because that's ours.
No. No Abraham Lincoln Monster Killer. We have we had things in similar veins. We did have Benjamin Franklin facing off against some ghosts in one of our stories.
Oh, there you go.
But we made a big sequel.
We go all over the place with these things. We've had the follow-up to the John Henry story, which has them investigating his death. We've had Sherlock Holmes investigating Jack the Ripper with a nice twist ending. Probably something better than what M. Night Shyamalan has done.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a pot shot. Now yeah, we lost him as a listener.
We've had Pinocchio as a robot boy.
Nice.
A bit of a steampunk Pinocchio. So our creators take the challenge and they let their imaginations run wild. It's a fun project. We've had very good talent on all of them, and it does get a lot of buzz. And hopefully, it gets bigger as we keep going.
So, Hassan, you have a question for Chris?
Yeah. How far does the process go? I mean, you basically have these powwows get-togethers, and people come to learn a craft from the experts. Does it go all the way up to potentially getting them a job, or is it just solely to kind of mass produce the expertise in as many people as possible so that a lot of people have a chance of getting the job in the industry?
Basically, we're not an employment agency, so the function of CAG is to help open the door and lead them on the path to gain their career going. It's up to the creators to actually step through. We're like a stepping stone. We're not the final word. We're a stepping stone, hopefully an important stepping stone. A lot of these publishers, a lot of the big publishers are now boys' clubs. Whoever's there is there until they leave. So it's hard to get into them. But things like portfolio reviews at conventions and having published work behind you go a long way to getting editors to take notice of you and maybe consider you for a job.
Right. Okay. All right. So, but also, do you take anybody off the street, anybody with any kind of interest in learning and match them up with an expert? Or, like, how does a person who is just hearing about it right now on the radio, how would they get involved?
Well, anybody is welcome to come check us out and see if we're a good fit for them. They can find information on our meeting places or sign up for our newsletter or even print out an application and apply online at our website, comicartguild.com. We do post the meeting dates on the main page at the beginning of the month, and we also include them in the newsletter. Basically, we welcome anybody to come check us out, anybody who has interest in the field, and see if we're a good fit for them. If they are, if we are a good fit, they're welcome to join. But basically, you get out of the group what you put into it. It's like anything else. If you're not willing to put in the time and the effort, the group is not going to be able to do anything for you. And we've had situations where we've had people come in all excited, all wanting to be part of something like this, but then they don't produce anything. They just wander off and then they disappear. It all depends on your drive, your commitment, your dedication, how much you really want to be in this industry. Because it's not an easy industry to be in anymore, because we have every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there producing a book. So the competition is fierce, and the dollar does not go as far as it used to.
One of the common threads that we've had on many of our other guests is when we always ask them why be in comic books or what advice you have, they're always like, well, don't do it. It's not worth it for the money. You're actively seeking out people to come in to help them out to go and do other stuff. What is your opinion on why are you so positive about going into the comic book industry where a lot of people who are even in the comic book industry aren't?
The comic book industry is like any other industry. It's going to have its ups and downs. It's going to have its good trends and its bad trends. Basically, you do it because you love it. It's a corny, cliche answer, but that's the answer. You do it because you love it. You have a story to tell, and you choose to tell it through the medium of comic books. And if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. And sometimes that can even lead to other things. That can lead to filmmaking aspirations or straight-up book writing, but you do it because you love it. There's no better reason to do anything.
No, that's a very good answer.
That's one of the best we've had.
Yeah, actually. So let's say I'm in Chicago or I'm in California and I want to be a part of this. I'm not going to take a flight every time coming down to the East Coast. How do I get involved if I'm all the way over there?
Well, that's where we are trying to build up our online presence. It's going a little slower than I would like because, you know, everything in the group, it is a volunteer operation. So everything we do is done under volunteer power. And unfortunately, you know, work and life tend to get in the way because most of us have to make a living on top of making books. But we are hoping to expand our online presence. We are hoping to be able to get some kind of interactive thing going where we can talk to people all over the country in real time, maybe even have them attend the meeting virtually. And the ultimate goal is to get chapters started all over, but we need reliable people in order to start chapters. We did have chapters towards the West Coast back in the day, but they've all kind of wandered off to do their own thing. So right now we're focused on the East Coast, but we do welcome anybody in all over the country and in any other country, and we do provide them opportunities to participate and learn through our newsletter, through our publications. So while they don't get the full experience yet, we do offer some semblance of the experience.
But that actually makes an interesting point. You said that you did have it at one time on the West Coast. Maybe there's somebody listening right now who's interested in even starting a chapter. So how would they go about doing that?
Well, they can contact me. My information is up on the CAG website, comicartguild.com. And then we can sit down and talk. But, you know, it has to be somebody serious, not somebody just wants to do it and then will abandon it in the next few months.
Right.
Again, it's all about getting back what you put in.
Son, you have another question for him?
Yeah, you took my questions. starting something up.
Yeah, thief.
I can. Yeah, comic books are kind of a tough trade right now. Can you kind of elaborate on how difficult the industry has become? I know you just said that there's, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry with a pencil is trying to get in. But how is that affecting the industry? Because it would seem like if everybody wanted to get into the industry, that would make it stronger. But you're saying it's kind of making it weaker.
I don't know so much about it making it weaker, but there are a lot of people who are getting into the industry for the wrong reasons, and it's mostly the fault of these big blockbuster movies. They see that characters are hitting the big screen, and they hear about these legal battles between publishers and creators over the rights of characters. Now, right or wrong on those topics, but it puts it into their mind that, hey, if I want to make a fortune, I just make a comic book. Somebody will buy it and make it a movie. And that's the wrong mentality to go into it with, because all you're doing is rushing out a product, not putting any real thought or love into it, and then becoming discouraged when it doesn't take off like you expect it to. And it is a lot easier to make books nowadays. You got all these independent printing companies, so independent publishing is at an all-time high. You don't really need to go through the big two, or big three if you want to count Image, anymore to publish. You can publish your own work, and that's both a good and bad thing. It's a double-edged sword, really.
Right. Yeah, because you got a lot of mediocre work coming out, a lot of people who are kind of uneducated in artistic storytelling taking the field. But I don't know. It just seems to me like we would all seem to benefit. And I'm not saying that you're saying that we're not. I'm kind of seeing personally that we're not, in spite of all these people being involved, we're just not getting stronger, you know, for some reason. It's making everything weaker instead of stronger. It's like Pro Tools for musicians. So now all of a sudden anybody who's at home with a computer can pretty much record an album, and somehow that weakens the industry. It doesn't make it stronger. It makes it weaker. And it's a phenomenon to me why so many more people being involved is actually, you know, weakening the medium in and of itself.
Well, it's really a matter of supply and demand. If you have more supply than demand, then you're not going to generate much in the way of profit. People, we're in the middle of an economic crisis. We still are. So the disposable dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. And comics are not the draw that they once were. Not with things like video games and you know, when you're able to download things onto your iPad or iWhatever. So, you know, we're competing with the digital market. You're competing with other forms of entertainment. And a lot of people just don't have the money to really dedicate it to buying comics as the hobby it once was. So when you have a lot of product out there and a lot of it looks the same, it creates a dilution in everything.
All right, so let's do a little happy stuff now, because that's kind of depressing. You also have an annual barbecue, right?
Yes, we do.
So not only do you get to be, yeah, that's happy. Free food.
Food is happy.
Yes, food is happy. So not only do you have meetings where all the artists get together, but you also have events such as a barbecue. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, it can't be about work all the time. The meetings are basically about work, even though we do go into tangents now and then and talk about other kind of stuff that we're interested in, movies or whatever. But those are really about work. The barbecue and other events, like we used to have some parties, not very well attended, but we had some parties, like a Halloween party and whatnot. You know, it's important to just get away from the work and just enjoy each other as friends. Because even though we're all colleagues, it doesn't mean we can't be friends as well.
Do you find that having the type of outlet for being friends with each other makes it a better work environment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you can compete, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. And there's room enough for everyone, really. And there's no reason why we can't support each other and let the public decide which product they want best. There's no reason for name-calling, backstabbing, all that other stuff. You can go out there, do your best work, and then it'll be up to the public on whether they like it or not.
Are you sure you're in America? Because that does not sound right at all. That's not. That sounds like very friendly competition going on here.
He's American, but he's not using the internet. Because that's all they do is snipe at each other and rip each other to shreds. That's pretty much what the internet is for.
Or send each other, you know, cops to arrest them.
Yes.
Hey, look. Back in the day, even Marvel and DC had friendly competition. They used to take jabs at each other, all in good fun. A little more vicious in the recent years, but back in the 70s and 80s, they used to poke fun at each other all the time. So, you know, there is room for a little fun in this. I mean, you got to have fun. You can't be all serious and driven. You got to have fun in order for it to translate onto the page. You want to have fun making the books. You want people to have fun reading them. And if you're not having fun making them, you're not going to have fun reading them because it's going to show through in your work.
Very, very true. So speaking of which, where can people, you mentioned the site, but where can people find the stuff? Any the web addresses, any shout outs you want to do? Now's the time.
Well, you know, if you can go to the website and find us. They can check us out at New York Comic Con. We'll be at table 1255. You come and see us in person. Like I said, you can sign up for the newsletter and find out where our meeting places are. And also, We're expanding a little bit at Comic-Con to include a lot of our creators in the same place. So we have the beginnings of what we're calling CAG Alley. You'll find three other tables with our members there. Nova Star Studios, J.M. DeSantis, one of our creative directors, and Guildworks Publications, a spinoff group.
So is that also part of CAG, which is, you know, to also have, you know, more of a presence at conventions?
Yes. And so another benefit of the group is we get together to split the costs on a table, and it ends up becoming a lot cheaper. It becomes a lot cheaper than getting your own table. You have constant coverage, so you have time to enjoy the convention, and you have other people supporting the selling of your work, so you're not by yourself.
So it really truly is a group effort type thing.
Absolutely. We're all in this together, and we show it every step of the way.
So what is the future of the Comic Artists Guild? Are we going to next year, what are we going to be seeing from you guys? Are you going to be one place each of the 50 states? What are you going to be doing?
World domination, hopefully.
Oh, that's it? Just 1 year of world domination?
Well, hey, with the power of the internet, you know. I hope the group will continue to grow. I hope more people will discover us. I hope more people will join us, take advantage of what we have to offer, and help us produce more work to get more people's work out there. We got a lot of first-timers who are getting their first publications through CAG. So, you know, it's great for them. It's a great help to them. It's a benefit to everybody, really.
And we've had many CAG members on the show before. I mean, it's a great thing that it's amazing how well there's so much unity in this organization. Yes, it's been ups and downs, but you know they've been around for a long time. And like I said, we've had other people, not just CAG representatives, but people who have started from CAG, and I've gotten to know them. And it's really a great thing. And I wish you continued success with this. We have like about 4 minutes, 5 minutes left. We have 5 minutes left, so we're gonna do some final thoughts. So, Chris, final thought on the Comic Artists Guild. This is for somebody who's on the fence right now. I want you to really sell it and really push down the whole, why should they join?
Why should they join? Well, if you love making books but you don't know how to go about it, you join us. You learn the ins and outs of the industry, ins and outs of publication, and ins and outs of your trade. So this way, when you finally get around to making your own book, you're putting out the best book possible and maybe getting some notice from these movie people or big publishers.
So, Hassan, do you have a final thought on the whole Comic Artists Guild? What do you think about it? I mean, I think you were interacting with them before, so you pretty much have an idea of what's going on. What do you think?
Yeah,
about this?
I think it's a fantastic organization. I think the idea in and of itself is fantastic. It's comic books are not easy by any stretch of the imagination, although it seems like it should be easy. When you start to get involved, you do realize that there's way more to it than just drawing pictures on a page. There's a lot of kind of science to it. So any way you can access any information on how to do the job better there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And learning, you know, if what everyone's saying is correct and there's so many people in it and the industry is that saturated, then the best way to get yourself noticed so that you can get those movie deals is to learn as much as possible so that your product can be amongst the best. And then probably be considered, better chance of being considered. So, yeah, learn as much as you can.
And also, I want to mention that you guys take all different levels of talent. So it's not just like you have to be this good to join. You just have to be passionate about it, right, Chris?
Exactly. Absolutely not. Like I said, we've published a lot of people for the first time in their entire lives. We've given a lot of people their first breaks. We've taught them how to go about the publishing. And we've taught them the ins and outs. We treat the books like an actual publisher, even though we're a little less stringent in reality, but we give them the full experience.
All right, so we have 2 minutes left now, so we're going to do the final thoughts. Chris, you have a final thought for us?
Keep making comics.
All right, Hassan, final thought?
I hope this is not my final thought.
every time, right? Every time. I say make sure you guys go to the New York Comic Con if you guys already have tickets, and go check out the Comic Artists Guild. They're really cool guys. I've known Chris for quite a long time, and it's a very great pleasure having you finally on the show. Much continued success with this, and I hope to see the Comic Artists Guild all over the entire United States in the future. World domination.
Well, much appreciated. Thanks for having me.
All right, so that about does it on this week on It Came From Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of the show, you can go on to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. Listen to the archives, which will be up in a week or so. And we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.